right. We are talking to Bob Blackburn Jr. And is it actually Jr.?
No, it's not. Our middle names are different. His middle name is Stanley. My middle name is Henry. But to avoid confusion, whenever the phone rang, when I was living at home as a kid, it was always Senior or Junior. So just to differentiate. And, of course, on the air, when I did stats with him, he would call me Junior. So that's how I'm kind of known in this area.
I completely relate to that because I share first names with my father. My first name is actually Russell, like his, but I go by my middle name, Paul, to avoid that same confusion.
There you go. Smart thing to do.
Yeah. So in Seattle, we've got a long and proud history of really good broadcasters, sports broadcasters. We've got Niehaus, we've got Calabro, we've got Pete Gross, Bob Rondo. But for a lot of people that are below a certain age, they might not be aware of one of the best ones we've ever had.
Thank you.
And his name was Bob Blackburn.
Yes. My old man, my dad.
Yeah. So what was he like?
He was a type A personality and a very friendly, very generous man, raised a large family.
Talk a little bit about what his background was before he became broadcaster for the Sonics.
Absolutely. I mean, it went back a long ways. In fact, he, as a youth, as a kid, had TB as a child in the 30s, and I actually had to spend some time away from school at home, and he listened to the radio a lot. Of course, during the 30s, radio was king. And, you know, he just kind of grew up listening to radio and liking it. And he had an uncle who one time noted my dad had a very loud voice as a young child, and he said, "Someday, son, you should become a radio broadcaster." And of course, my dad didn't pay that much attention to it until later. But during the war years, World War II, he didn't get a chance to serve when he was 18, 19 because of his prior health problems. And he actually ended up in radio in Los Angeles during the war years in Hollywood at KFAC, hosting like a big band dance party type of a thing. He wanted to get into sports. He had actually done a little local sports down in the Fullerton area for the Fullerton High School football team. And he was always proud of saying that there was a local guy there who would come out and fix the PA systems, or, you know, if they had an electronic problem, would come out, and his name was Leo Fender. Mm-hmm. And my dad always said, "I wish I would have bought stock in his company because I'd be a rich man today." But he knew Leo Fender, but he always wanted to get into sports casting, but his first love really was radio, so he was doing that until the opportunity arose. And then after the war years, 46, 47, he was hired to broadcast for the Fresno State Bulldogs College in Fresno, California, obviously, and he went up there to do sports.
And what sport was that?
Well, football and basketball for the teams. He also ended up doing local baseball there for a double A or a single A team in the California. Which one? Class B, my mom says. the Fresno. What were they? The Cardinals. Yeah, they were. He got a job in Portland to broadcast as a second broadcaster for the Portland Beavers, which was a AAA Pacific Coast League team, in 1950, at the height of the Pacific Coast League, before the Giants and the Dodgers moved out in 58. So back at that day, it was like, you know, the Oakland Seals, the Hollywood Stars, the Portland Beavers, Tacoma, Vancouver. And it was it was almost a major league, but, you know, before the two major league teams, national league teams, moved out to California. So he was doing that, but he also became very, very well known in Portland for not only doing, eventually being the only announcer for the Portland Beavers. He initially did it with Raleigh Truitt, who was an old-timer newspaper guy who kind of moved into the broadcast booth in Portland, and they brought my dad in to help him out. Then the two of them did it for a number of years, and we lived in Portland from 1951. Actually, I was born in Southern California, in San Jose, California, while my dad was broadcasting the Bing Crosby Pebble Beach Golf Tournament for national radio actually at that time, and I was born then while they were down in California. My mom's parents lived in the near Fresno. But anyway, so my dad in Portland ended up having a sports show. He had on the radio. He also was a disc jockey. I have a picture of my dad with Elvis Presley and a contest winner from my dad's radio show. When Elvis, the only time Elvis played in Portland was in 1957, and it's a picture that's been handed down to me.
Oh, wow.
Been made to, for all my brothers and sisters, all have copies. My mom, I also have a picture of my mom with Elvis from the same luncheon. But my dad hosted a 50-minute television sports show, and he was very, very active in the community, and he was the MC for a lot of sports banquets. He not only did the Portland Beavers, but he also did Oregon and Oregon State football and basketball, until eventually he bought the rights to Oregon State football and basketball in the late 50s, and he broadcast the team when Terry Baker...
Did you say he bought the rights to it?
He bought the rights. He owned the rights. And
okay.
He created a sports network in Oregon, the Oregon State Sports Network, which my dad, you know, would go out and hustle up local stations, regional, you know, like Astoria or Coos Bay or whatever. And he created one of the largest sports networks west of the Mississippi for a regional team. And among the broadcasts, like I was saying, was for the 1961-62 season when Terry Baker led Oregon State to the Liberty Bowl, and he won the Heisman Trophy. He was, I think, one of the first West Coast winners of the Heisman Trophy. Tommy Prosser was the coach. Dad did basketball when Mel Counts, one of the early seven-footers of the game, played, and Terry Baker also played basketball for Oregon State. And then later on, when Dee Andros became the coach for the Beavers, when Tommy Prosser went down to UCLA to coach the Bruins, the team in 1967, which actually was the year that we moved from Portland up to Seattle, my dad got the job for the Seattle Supersonics that year. He actually was still on the broadcast rights and was still doing the games for Oregon State. And after the opening of the Sonic season, as I recall, he was wearing a tuxedo, and he had to make the plane flight back to Purdue when Oregon State played Purdue, and who was then number one or number two in the nation, and the Beavers upset them. And the coach thought my dad's tuxedo brought good luck, so for the next series of games, he had to keep wearing the tuxedo to the broadcast until the Beavers lost. But among that run was the upset of then number one USC at Oregon State in Corvallis on Veterans Day in 1967, when O.J. Simpson ended up being the Heisman Trophy winner for that year, and Oregon State upset them. And the following week or the week after, went down to UCLA, who then also were ranked number two or three, and they tied them. So that team became known as the Giant Killers, which were actually inducted into the State of Oregon Sports Hall of Fame a few years ago, as well as was my dad.
So your dad is in the Oregon's in what Hall of Fame?
The State of Oregon, yeah. Now, when I say the Oregon State Hall of Fame, people assume that that means the college, but no, it's not. He's actually in the State of Oregon Sports Hall of Fame, as well as the Washington State Sports Hall of Fame.
Okay, that's quite an honor.
It very much so is. And he also was the Oregon State Sportscaster of the Year for a number of years. And I think he won it one or two years when he was here in the Washington State area.
So late 60s come along, and a new franchise opens up in the NBA in Seattle.
Correct.
And he is one of, what, a little over 100 applicants?
Yeah, something like that. I can't remember the exact number. I was, at that time, I would have been a sophomore going into my junior year in high school. And I think it was whittled down to the final three, and then he was chosen. He actually had been applying for other major league positions, like in baseball. He would have been the number two man for the Boston Red Sox, but a receptionist at a radio station he was working at failed to get him a message.
Oh, my God.
In time, yeah. So he could have actually been the voice of the Red Sox.
Well, lucky for us.
Well, there you go.
Lucky for us.
But he always did want to do. He always wanted to move up to the major league level, and he prided himself on being what I'm pretty sure, is the first major league pro sports announcer in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest. He loved the Pacific Northwest, both Oregon and Washington. He felt very much so at home here. He kind of did not want to take any jobs like in the Los Angeles area or places that he felt he couldn't really raise his family the way he wanted to raise his family, which right. up here was. And plus, he loved to fish. I mean, that was his big passion when he wasn't broadcasting or working. You could always find him trying to go on a lake somewhere, a little boat, and you know, a fishing pole in his hand and all that kind of. He loved that.
So lake fishing was his favorite.
Yeah, lake fishing more or less. He also liked to salmon fish a lot too. He would go out with friends in a boat, or eventually he got a boat that was large enough to kind of go out, out of Anacortes and stuff. It was a huge boat, but it got him out past the breakers, you know, so he could salmon fish, or he would salmon fish in the Sound or whatnot. But he loved to go trout fishing in some of the smaller lakes, some of it you had to hike into. You know, he liked that.
So he was looking to get a major league job somewhere, in whatever sport he could get, apparently. Was basketball his favorite?
He felt that his strengths were in basketball, football, and baseball. Those were the three, and of course those were probably the three most popular major league sports at that time in the mid-late 50s. So, yeah.
Would you say that basketball was always his favorite?
No? I don't know if he had a favorite, to be honest with you. I think he liked doing all of them because they brought unique challenges. Each one was a little bit different. With basketball, it's almost like hockey. He actually was the announcer for the Portland Buckaroos in 1960-61. And I remember as a kid going to some of the games, and he liked the action. He liked the pace of both basketball and hockey because you constantly something was going on all the time, which gave you a lot to talk about. Football, there was a lot going on also, but there was time between plays to talk about the players, or you have a color commentator to talk about stuff. And with baseball, he did have a kind of a color commentator. It wasn't an ex-athlete like so much of it is today. It was another radio disc jockey who was a friend and worked at the same radio station in Portland as he did. And with baseball, you know, with the length of time in between pitches, there's a lot of time to tell stories. So he also enjoyed that. So, I mean, obviously basketball became his favorite once he got started doing the Sonics, and you know that became his primary sport to broadcast. I mean, he still did a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but his contract and stuff was basically, you know, he did his sports shows, his radio sports shows. But he wasn't doing play-by-play for really any other sports, as I recall, when he was doing the Sonics. I think basically contractually, that's, you know, when you're doing that, that's kind of what you do.
How special was 1979 to him?
It was the pinnacle. It was the peak. I mean, the year before that had been the pinnacle, but also the great disappointment when we lost in the finals to the Bullets here in Seattle, too. I was at that game. The next season, everybody had that feeling that it could be magic. And it was such a tough, tough season because everybody was gunning for them. And they had to slog through the season, through the playoffs. And once they got into the finals, everybody could feel the destiny. After the first couple of games, they really sensed that it was theirs to lose, really. You know, they really felt that they were going to. And my mom went back to a couple of the games back there. I'm not sure if she went back that championship season or the year before, but I know that she went back to see one or two of the games back in Landover, Maryland, where they were played. And he got a ring, and he was so proud to show that ring off to everybody. And, you know, it gave him stories to tell for years. You know, the horns are honking all over the Northwest. I mean, it's a line that it's, you know, when at his memorial service in Bellevue in 2010, we played an excerpt of the championship game, the end of the game, when they won it. And so, you know, that's really his legacy. Is that season and that year.
There is a clip of that, or actually two or three clips of that passage on YouTube right now.
Yeah, right.
And I was watching it recently, and I was struck. I had forgotten how smooth he was and how good he was. Because it had been so long since I'd listened to him, and he was a really, really good broadcaster.
Thank you. Yeah, he was. It's really kind of funny because I actually, a lot of his, before he passed away, and I was working at Radio in Los Angeles myself. I was not on the air. There's only one voice, and to me, and he was it. So, but I kind of fell into radio and was working behind the scenes and worked for Westwood One Radio Network down in L.A. But I had access to reel-to-reel tape machines, and he had a few boxes of tapes, both from Portland and some Sonics material that he wanted to archive and put on CD, which is what I did. So I listened to a lot of his broadcasts while I was re-recording this into computers and then burning on CDs and stuff. But yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
And living in Los Angeles, when I meet people, I've been down there now for almost 25 years, but when I meet people who have been in L.A. for a length of time who remember Chick Hearn, who passed away a few years ago, when I'm explaining my dad, I tell them, well, my dad was the Chick Hearn of Seattle, and they get that.
Yeah.
I would put my dad on a par with Chick, and they were, contemporaries, and they were friends, they were colleagues in a sense, so.
I heard Calabro talking about your dad one time, or maybe I read a quote of his, I can't remember which, but he said that your dad was right up there with Chick Hearn and as one of the best broadcasters around.
We love Kevin. Kevin has been very generous in his comments about my dad, and they became good friends. Initially, it was a little bit difficult. I won't go into the whole Barry Ackerley story.
Right.
Suffice it to say that... In general, Barry Ackerley was not happy to have my dad there because he was a remnant of the Sam Shulman era and the championship season era, and Barry really wanted his own team and his own staff and his own championship, and he saw my dad as being a remnant of something that kind of a thorn in his paw, so to speak. And of course, a couple of times when the rights to the Sonics transferred, they initially were on KOMO. Then they went to Cairo, and then they went to KJR, which Ackerley owned. And twice, both times, when they went from Coma to Cairo, they wanted to remove my dad and get somebody in. Wayne Cody, among people, was mentioned. It just, the fan support and the reaction of the radio listeners and people who love my dad was such that they kept him on, because they realized it would be a publicity disaster for them to fire my dad and hire somebody new. So he remained with the team all the way up until Ackerley finally was able to remove him gently, supposedly, in 1992 by saying that he was going to retire. My dad did not want to retire. He was basically forced out.
Well, that's a shame that it had to happen like that.
It is, but he just got tired of... Barry just kept making things more and more difficult for my dad, to the point where he was not even doing play-by-play the last season. He was being the locker room reporter, or he was doing the pregame shows, and Kevin was doing play-by-play. So it kind of, my dad was a proud person, but he was also, like my mom likes to say, he was a company man.
Uh-huh.
So he'd bite his tongue, and he'd do his job, and he'd do it well. And I know a lot of Sonics fans nowadays have really, with Howard Schultz, have a real hard time, because he's the one that let the team slip away. But when Howard Schultz came back into the picture initially, he brought my dad back along with some of the other ex-Sonics and made them what he called Sonics legends. And he invited them to all the games that they wanted to come to and hang out and just mix with the public. And my dad loved that he could come back and be a part of the Sonic team history and interact with the fans. And
well, that's good.
So for that, I have to thank Howard Schultz for that, even though I've seen Sonics Gate. I wasn't living here when all that was coming down, and I would talk to my dad about it, and, I know that it was a great disappointment. I actually came up the Christmas of the last season that the Sonics played, and when they had drafted Kevin Durant, and I went to one of the games, and I got to tell you, it was the first time I ever paid to go to a Sonics game. Because I always had either got free tickets or I worked. I used to work for my dad as a statistician a lot of times. But I took a picture of my dad's banner hanging up in the thing there, and then I surprised my parents for Christmas that year, and we all went back to the game, a few days later, and I got a chance to see Lenny and Kevin and my dad hanging out, took a picture of them, and I'm very glad I got a chance to do that.
And that banner is locked away somewhere, correct?
Well, the city of Seattle owns all of those somewhere. We're not sure exactly where it is. My mom is saying it's something about the Museum of History and Industry, but I don't. I think it's in a city-owned warehouse someplace. We had to actually, and I think technically the Oklahoma people own some of that stuff. We had to get permission from Clay Bennett to get it out to be displayed in the church, Methodist Church in Bellevue, for my dad's memorial service, public memorial over there.
That is a crime that you had to get his permission.
Well, yeah, you know, what can I say? And we're talking about the Barry Hansen thing and trying to get the new arena and everything like that. I was hoping to at some point be able to, you know, raise all the championship banners and the players' retired numbers as well as my dad's banner at some point in time. And, you know, it still could happen.
I've
got faith that it's going to happen. I can't think that it wouldn't. And I just hope my mom makes it past that long.
Yeah. So when the Sonics left in 2008, Sonics fans everywhere basically just had their childhoods ripped out of their hearts.
Yeah.
Was it harder on your dad than it was on us?
Well, he had been retired. So, you know, I mean, they retired him in 1992. So you've got those 16 years of Sonic history where he was not involved day-to-day with the team, wasn't traveling with the team. I mean, he was still, you know, following the team, and he went to games, and he was friends with Kevin. And in his retirement, he and my mom actually ended up being tour hosts for a local tour agency, and they traveled the world. They went on 50 or 60 different world tours, and, you know, from all over the world, and they'd do two or three every year at least, and they would, you know, they'd act as the tour hosts, not necessarily the guides, but they were the ones that made sure that everybody had their plane tickets and their hotel reservations, and they'd host the welcoming parties, and if somebody lost a bag, they'd track it down, that kind of a thing. And so, he was very disappointed, obviously, that the team went away because he was such a part of the legacy of it. But I don't think it stabbed at the heart as much as it did to so many more Sonic fans and faithful.
Because he had kind of built a life of his own apart from it.
Yeah.
Okay.
He really had, you know, and he was still doing a little bit of, radio and TV stuff.
Are there any particular Sonics or Sonics coaches that he had especially close relationships with?
Well, Lenny, obviously. They were friends and were, you know, both associated with that. But my mom and my dad became very, very close friends with Bob Kloppenberg, who was a defensive coach for the latter part of the Sonics, as I recall, the Nate McMillan years and before when I moved down to to L.A. But Bob and his wife still live up in this area, and my mom and them are still good friends, so he liked them a lot. Most all the guys on the championship team, he really liked a lot. There was a couple that he didn't have really strong friendships with. Freddie Brown comes to mind. Fred kind of went to his own beat of his own drummer, so to speak, but, you know, he liked J.J. and Jack and Gus and all those, and D.J. You know, of course, D.J. was traded to Boston. But a lot of the other players who still lived in the area, Slick Watts, people like that, he would run into them. Lenny has a golf tournament that he has every year, a charity event that my dad would go to, and he'd see a lot of these old players and friends. So I think my dad didn't have an enemy in the world. Everybody was his friend. Even people he hadn't met yet were friends he hadn't met yet.
I just got to tell you, I am 45 years old now, and yeah. I would say for any Sonics fan, maybe 35 and over, that actually had the privilege of listening to your dad.
Right.
He was a very comforting voice to us. And I just remember turning on the radio in my bedroom at night, listening to the games, and it was just a really comforting
voice to listen to. I think the thing from my old man was when he got letters from people who were blind, and those letters meant the world to him because, you know, these people would say, you know, you create this picture in our mind. We're at the game. We see the game. You know, we're a part of the game because of the way you describe it. And my dad felt that he was doing people a service by doing that. So
yeah,
that was very, very cool. And I tell people, you know, I'm kind of a hoops junkie myself, so I tell people I was lucky enough to work with my dad off and on from actually before we moved up here. I did a couple of college games and then did Sonics games in the 70s, 60s, and 70s, and off and on. All my siblings and my mom and brothers-in-laws and sisters-in-laws all seemed to do stats at one time or another for my dad. But I was lucky enough to see, you know, they have a list of the 50 greatest players of all time. I think I saw 45 of them, you know, or 40 of them, actually. You know, to going back to seeing Wilt Chamberlain and all these other, you know, classic players, you know, Bird and Magic and all that kind of. I hate the Lakers, though, by the way.
So do I. I think I speak
them.
For all.
They knocked us out of the playoffs in the early 80s too many times.
Yeah.
You know, after the championship years. So
I think I speak for all Sonics fans that are listening right now when I say I'm very jealous of the way you grew up.
Well, thank you. I mean, I was very lucky. I was very blessed. It really was, you know, and just, you know.
Yeah.
And let me mention this really quickly too. I am on Facebook and it says Bob Blackburn, and a lot of people said, God, I used to listen to you all the time on the radio. I go, no, that's, you know, I just don't put Bob Blackburn Jr. because I'm not the junior, but it says Bob Blackburn. I actually live in Hollywood now. That's where I've been for the last 25 years working in radio, and now I'm kind of semi-retired actually. But people can friend me on Facebook, and I am actually, I have tapes, audio tapes that burn onto CD that I am kind of spelling a little bit under the radar, in case the NBA lawyers are listening, that to help pay off some of the medical bills and things like that. All the money goes to my mom, you know, to help with her, and also to keep the flame alive. I mean, basically, you know, and I've got things like the 1974 All-Star Game, when he broadcast with Marv Albert and Spencer Haywood was playing, and all these, you know, if you can think back to 1974 and the All-Stars of those years, like, I kind of have stuff like that. I don't have a lot of complete games, but I've got a lot of partial games, even from 1967. Some of the games with the Sonics' very first season playing against Philadelphia.
Oh, wow.
With Wilt Chamberlain playing.
Wow.
And I'm going to put some of that together, but I'm also going to put together some CDs of some of the interviews that my father did with players like Wilt and Larry Bird and people like that, and kind of put those out there. So if anybody's interested, they can get in touch with me, and I would be more than happy to get back in touch with them. And
are you also on Twitter?
No, I don't do Twitter. I don't even have a cell phone, man.
Okay.
I'm kind of a troglodyte in that area, even though I do sound design for theater in Los Angeles, and worked in radio at Westwood One Radio Network for about 20 years. I just kind of, me and technology don't always get along really, really well. So.
Yeah, I hear you. Is your mother available to talk?
Yeah, I think she's here someplace. Let me walk around here. I think she was watching TV back in here.
Okay.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Pat. This is Pat, right?
Yes, it is.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. And you were talking to a website called Sonics Rising. And we, of course, love your husband to death. I mean, he's one of my favorite childhood memories. And I just want to thank you for everything that he provided for us. And I was just wondering, if there was one thing that Sonics fans could do to pay tribute to your husband, what would it be?
Just remember him. Because he always would say when somebody would, later on in life, when they would come over and say something to him, he'd just say, thank you for remembering me.
Oh.
It was so sweet, because he'd always say, thank you. I'm just so glad to meet you, and thank you for remembering me.
Yeah, that's nice. I told your son that I've been watching some YouTube clips of your husband recently. And I forgot how good he was.
Oh, he was wonderful, I have to tell you. He was very good at the beginning, but he was just so great. He really, when he was in Oregon, he really fine-tuned everything he did. And I remember my dad was an old pro baseball player and everything, and he was really into sports. And he always told me that he said, your husband's going to go somewhere someday because he's really, really good. And then towards the time that he came up here, I think he was so well-versed, he could have done any sport. He could have gone into football. He could have gone into baseball. He won several jobs, and really it was – he should have been in baseball, Major League Baseball, when he was 26 years old.
Uh-huh.
Because he went an audition and he didn't even know about it until years later. And that was for Boston. And we were moving from one place to another, and he never got the message. This gal was supposed to take the message.
Oh, my goodness.
And call him if he ever got any kind of a telephone call or a letter or whatever. And anyway, she said, oh, she didn't even know where he was. Well, he had given her all the information. Well, anyway, we found out later it was for Boston. And then later on, he won the audition for San Francisco. And the advertising agency called him and said, you've won the job. Well, then he was, he didn't get the job. In fact, the guy wrote him a letter, and we knew him, Bob knew him very well. He was, he wrote him and said, we cannot afford two announcers, so we're going to have to go with Lon Simmons. And Lon Simmons had taken the job, Bob's Fresno job, when he left Fresno. And anyway, Lon was working, then he was hired by San Francisco. And Bob, even though he won the audition, this guy wrote him and just said, you know, we just can't afford to, so we're going to have to go with Lon. Or he won the San Francisco job. So he really could have been a great, also great baseball announcer. He also, let's see, he went back to Philadelphia and was a runner-up to a Philadelphia broadcaster. Ricky Ashburn won that. And so anyway, then he could have done football. He could have done anything, but he loved the basketball. And, of course, I loved it because it was inside and it only was so many hours.
Did you go to a lot of the games?
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh, gosh, yes. I went to a lot of them, and I'll tell you, I froze to death for a long time in that big old barn. And it was so funny because...
Meaning the Kingdom?
The Kingdom.
Yeah.
And they would open that big old door in the back, and we were sitting across the basketball court. That breeze would come in. Well, anyway, the first year or two, I can't remember which. Well, no, because Lenny wasn't there as a coach, but that was when he came in as a player. But anyway, all of a sudden, I said, why in the world are the Sonics sitting on that side of the court where all the breeze comes in? Why don't you sit on the other side? And so finally somebody heard me, and they moved the team from one side to the other so they wouldn't be by that open daggum door.
Oh, that's funny.
And Bob, of course, was sitting down below, and so he would get cool too, but he'd always work with his shirt sleeve. He always felt like he was warm enough, and he got powered up. He got warmed up, so he was ready to do the game. But he loved working on the floor, but he really liked it up in the middle a little bit better because you can see more of the court.
Right.
But he did enjoy working courtside. He really did, and it was fun. And of course, I sat across from all of them, the bench and everything. But
right.
We had a wonderful time. We had a wonderful time together, and he was great. There was just no doubt about it. He was really, I'll tell you, no kidding. If you listen to those games and you hear, and Bobby may have told you, I don't know, about doing the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right on every single thing, and they took off Musburger. That was his name.
Brent Musburger, yeah.
Brent Musburger, yeah. And put Bob's name on that because when they heard it, they said, oh my gosh, he is right on the play.
Yeah.
You would never have known that he was doing the radio and not the TV.
Oh,
I mean,
goodness.
How perfect. It was just absolutely perfect.
Well, and he was better than Musburger, too.
Oh, my God, yes. But the thing was that he really he painted a picture.
In 2008, we lost the team.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2010, we lost Bob.
Yeah.
How special would it be for you and your family to get the Sonics back in town and to be able to raise his banner to the rafters again?
It would mean everything. It would mean everything. I would love it. The thing is, the banner is a little smaller than everybody else's banner, I'll have to say. But that was another another era of other ownership. And I think if it had been Sam Shulman, it would have been different. But
right.
anyway, so that's the way it goes.
Right.
But anyway, he was very honored to have it up there. And
was there a microphone on the banner? I can't remember.
Yes, there is a microphone on it. It was there for Bob's memorial service. I believe it was Kevin who went over to the Science and Industry, Museum of Science and Industry, where it's packed away with all the others, and he brought it to the church.
Right.
And the men at the church had to, I don't know, they about broke their necks putting it up in an aisle, well, it was a hallway, so because it was so big, and hung it there. I just thought that was so wonderful. So I don't know what's going to happen with this young man. I don't know Chris Hansen one bit, and I think he was a little younger. I don't know how much he really knew about Bob or anything, but Bobby probably told you how many CDs and everything we have.
Yeah.
That I would love to sell.
Well, I'm sure that Chris Hansen is well aware of the Bob Blackburn legacy, because Chris Hansen was around. Chris Hansen lived in Seattle in 79 when the championship happened.
I know,
happened.
But you know, people forget.
Yeah.
People forget and they remember who the newest announcer was.
Right.
And the thing is that I love Kevin, and he's just a darling young man, and I love Susan, I love them all.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is they have totally different styles, no doubt about it, but they work well together, and the thing is that for a lot of the younger generation, they remember Kevin maybe a little bit more than they remembered Bob, and I think that sometimes one forgets how
yeah.
really great Bob was at announcing. And he didn't have cliches, he didn't have a lot of cliches, he didn't have a lot of really loud things.
Catchphrases.
I mean, his voice would go up and everything when something exciting would happen, but like some announcers scream and yell now. I mean, I hear some of them, and I can't believe that they just get so daggum excited that you don't really tell what's going on. And I think that a lot of younger folk like that.
Right.
They like that because it seems to be sound more exciting. In
right.
the olden days, the game was important. The announcer was not that important. The game was the thing, and Bob always felt that way. The
right.
game was everything. You were along to paint the picture.
And then get out of the way, yeah.
And to tell them about it and everything, but you didn't get really totally carried away all the time, because too often they just do it too much, and it gets irrelevant, really, in a way.
Well, Pat, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for agreeing to talk to us.
Well, that's very sweet. Listen, I love to talk about Bob anytime.
Well, this is going to be a podcast at sonicsrising.com, and I'm sure that Bob could find that for you. And we will not let these youngsters forget about Bob Blackburn.
We're
not going to
let it happen. That's very sweet. Like I said, I really enjoy listening to all of these young men. Voices are very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think I fell in love with Bob's voice before I even met him, because he was doing the Fresno State football, and I was listening to him, and then he also had a DJ show, and then I finally met him, fell madly in love with him, and the whole bit. So I really enjoy hearing these other fellows very much, like Kevin and Bob Rondo, and they're just all really good, and
yeah.
I enjoy hearing them. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.